Welcome to the ISF Podcast from the Information Security Forum. The ISF Podcast is hosted by ISF CEO Steve Durbin, and every episode he brings listeners features timely conversations, practical insights, and resources for global cybersecurity professionals. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. Today, Steve sits down with the mayor of Manchester, England, Andy Burnham, to discuss the nuts and bolts of leading a city into the digital age, strategies for building consensus, and what ISF Congress participants can look forward to when they arrive in Manchester in just a few weeks.
Andy, very good to see you. Thanks for joining me on the podcast.
You're welcome, Steve. Great to be with you.
You've been mayor of Greater Manchester now since 2017, and you were re-elected in 2021. So you've been in the role for some while. And the job of mayor ranges from setting budgets and priorities for Greater Manchester's public services right the way through to acting as an ambassador for the region. I'm really interested to hear specifically about your work to establish Greater Manchester as a UK and European centre for cyber and digital ethics, trust and security. And the thing I find really significant about that is that you didn't just leave it to being a centre for cybersecurity, but you included those other elements of ethics and trust into the mix. So talk about how those go together. What's the importance of cyber and cyber resilience for you and indeed for Manchester?
So thank you, Steve. That's a really good place to start. And I guess the answer to your question is about me being true to the history of the place that I lead. And the truth about Manchester and the wider Greater Manchester area is that it's always pursued industrial progress hand in hand with social progress. So it never decouples what we're trying to achieve economically from what we want for our residents and what we think is right for everybody. And I hope that that's a vision that resonates with people. You know, if you look back, you could go back right to perhaps some of your, if you have many US listeners, as I'm pretty sure you do, I'll give you an example. If you go back to the height of the American Civil War in 1862, 160 years ago, Manchester was known then as Cottonopolis. So cotton came from around the world to be woven into cloth in the city, and there were many mills in Manchester at that time. And difficult as it was for the workers who were seeing their jobs kind of go dark, the American Civil War presented a real problem with the blockade of cotton, and the workers had to decide what to do. And they took a decision, unbelievably in many ways, 160 years ago, that they wouldn't handle slave pick cotton. And it's why Manchester has a statue today of Abraham Lincoln. We have a Lincoln Square because he very modestly sent us a statue after that. And praise the workers for their sublime Christian heroism. But it's an amazing story about Manchester. There's, you know, something deep in the DNA of the city that with industry and progress must come a kind of commitment to values of equality and diversity and solidarity, actually, because they stood with people they'd never met or were likely to meet when they took that stand. So you've got to be true to the place, haven't you? And as we develop our aspiration to be the UK's leading digital city region, you know, we do so with a regard for digital in all facets of life, not just as a creator of jobs and a stimulator of our industry. It's about a digital world that works for everybody, that allows everybody to protect themselves and what's important to them, that keeps kids safe, but also, you know, a digital world that enhances us all socially so that we don't have residents who are digitally divided and cut off. So again, we have a huge amount of work going on digital inclusion in the city. So for us to earn that title, a digital city region, we think it's got to be much more than about showing people gleaming offices and, you know, amazing sort of tech hubs and cool places where people can hang out. It's about a city region where all of that works for the benefit of everybody. And that's very true to the Manchester way.
You make a really interesting point there, Andy, about digital inclusion. And on this podcast and in other sessions that we've run, you know, one of the themes that we've explored is that very topic, because one of the concerns I certainly have is the ever worsening digital divide. The people that can afford the technology, that have access to the technology, versus those that can't. And it isn't just about your financial demographic. It's about age. It's about all sorts of other aspects as well. And, you know, the world is ever inching towards being all technology, all on. And we run the risk of leaving behind those that aren't perhaps as comfortable using that technology or simply don't have access to it. So I'm really interested to hear what your plans and thoughts are for true digital inclusion in Manchester.
So you're right that there is a risk always that some residents will be excluded from the conversation or from the opportunity that comes from being fully digitally connected in all facets of your life. I think that risk kind of came to the fore in a very prominent way in the pandemic, because we all experienced how the world of our work moved much more online than it had been before, but also public services and the delivery of public services or the access to even supermarket delivery and all of those things. You know, everybody was kind of moving very quickly in that direction. And hence the kind of fear around some people who couldn't access that has kind of been accentuated. But then when you overlay on top of that a cost of living crisis, then you can see why this issue of digital inclusion has to sort of kind of move up the agenda. You know, in political meetings throughout most of my life, it was always the last thing on the agenda, and maybe you might get around to it, and it's a sort of nice to do and a fluffy thing that, you know, is good if you've got time. I don't think we can see it that way anymore. I think digital connectivity has to be seen as, people might describe it as, the fourth utility. You know, you've got water, gas, electric, and you've got to have your broadband. Otherwise, you can't function. And in a cost of living crisis, if you were to make people put those things in a hierarchy, it would probably have to be water first and then electric and gas next. And then food has got to be in that mix. But then obviously broadband comes after, because it's just not the first thing that people will be able to prioritize. So we are in a time now where the world has moved online, but some residents are, their homes are going dark, if you like, and they are being cut off. And that presents a real issue with regard to this growing sense of a divided society, growing inequality, some residents just out of the conversation, unable to access the support and services that they need. So I guess, you know, it's amazing for us now to be hosting Information Security Forum. You know, we are obviously thrilled to have this in our city, but we would hope that some of these issues are kind of at the forefront of people's minds. You know, it has to be an issue for everybody. And for those who aren't connected, we have to find ways to make them connected. You asked me, what have I done about it? I established a digital inclusion task force action network after the last mayoral election. And we've set ourselves the goal of a city region where every under 25, every disabled person and everybody over 75 is supported to get online. And there's some really exciting and innovative work coming through to support those goals.
That sounds great. I was having a conversation yesterday with a chief information security officer who was talking to me about the very real challenge that he faces. He works for a multinational organization. But the very real challenge that he faces in terms of being able to access talent, being able to access the right skill sets. And one of the suggestions that I put to him was, what about setting up an apprenticeship scheme? What about engaging with some of the, not just universities, because frankly, I think that that's probably a little bit too late in the educational process, but bring it down more to the secondary schools, even primary schools, so that we're starting to build out this increased awareness, understanding, skills, capability. Now, you've been, again, a very strong advocate of apprenticeship programs and talking about those. Tell us a little bit about the sorts of things that you would like to see companies doing in Manchester, yes, but broader than that, to really try to encourage some of the younger skills that we need to see emerging.
Yeah. Oh, goodness me. There are so many things, Steve, that I could say in response to that. But before I do, I guess the question is one for me. Before I ask companies, what do we want from you? I think they need to hear, well, what can I do for them, you know, which will make life easier? Because I think at the moment they're trying to work around the system, and it's not quite, you know, there's the issue with talent supply because the school system and the skills system after it is not quite bringing people through in the right numbers with the right skills to, you know, hence everybody talks about it, and I hear it all of the time. And I'm very conscious that I need to come up with better answers to the digital talent supply. There are major issues with the school curriculum, I think. It went backward-looking a decade ago. It excluded ICT from what's called the English Baccalaureate. I think that was a terrible step. So the curriculum is an issue. It's not something I can actually deal with because it's not a devolved policy, but it is a very real issue. Mm-hmm. But then what can I do to make it easier? Well, I've got to try and connect the young talent of my city region with those employers and inform them about what those employers are looking for so that they can then begin the journey of getting ready for that new world of work. Because what I feel is, we can just talk broadly about digital or cyber. What I'm kind of hearing from players in the city is the needs of individual organizations and businesses are becoming more and more and more specific about what exactly they need. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to kind of show young people those roles. What are those jobs that are out there? What do you need to do them? And what's your sort of pathway towards them? And where can you get some of the kind of skills that you might need? So I've created a system called GMAX, Greater Manchester Apprenticeships and Career Service, which is meant to be one window on the world of work in Greater Manchester so that young people can actually see what is out there in the modern economy, rather than some of the outdated talk that they get from their parents, of like I give to my kids at times. I'm kind of not fully up to speed with everything that's out there. And I think it's just really important that they see the actual jobs that people are trying to recruit to. And then the next step might be to allow businesses to co-design with our colleges and our other training providers, digital apprenticeships, supported pathways, even degree digital apprenticeships, so even higher level qualifications that kind of allow people to plot their course to those amazing and exciting new roles. So it's why I'm asking the UK government to give me greater control over post-16 education. In this country, we've kind of often prioritised the academic university route over the technical route. And I think we need to make those two routes of equal value, where one is much more delivered locally because I can connect it to the real opportunities in our economy. And I would want to do that in partnership with our businesses. They in many ways should be given an ability to lead that technical education system. And that's what we would want to do if the government gave us those powers. So it's an area that really needs fixing. And I think we need to be able to give better answers than we are currently doing.
I mean, we could talk at length about all of the different initiatives in Manchester. You've got more than 10,000 digital and tech businesses in Manchester, for instance. But let's concentrate on this one, because I'm really quite interested in this. This is the Greater Manchester Digital Blueprint. Mm. Now, some of the people listening to this may not be familiar with that, but tell us a bit about that.
Well, it was published on the eve of the pandemic to support that.
That was pretty good timing, wasn't it?
Yeah, maybe it wasn't. In some ways wasn't, but then I guess in another way was because of the way the world was about to change. And it was meant to be the sort of roadmap, if you like, to support that ambition of the UK's leading digital city region. So it did have those kind of industrial ambitions set out, those jobs ambitions that we absolutely do have. But it was also about the thing that Greater Manchester says it always likes to do, which is to do things differently. I think we can lay legitimate claim to that title. We do try and do things differently. And we've said that we want to do digital differently. And we are. I think we're beginning to kind of use it in a different way to make our public services work differently. But also it's this critical thing about making sure all of our residents are in the conversation, they're in the digital room, they're able to access the digital opportunities that come from that. And therefore, it builds a sort of a situation where we draw on all of our talent. And the blueprint was about kind of fully sketching out all of that picture, including the very specific skills initiatives that we run. So I wouldn't want anybody listening to this to think that we don't invest in digital skills. We really do, heavily. We've got a huge range of programs that we support, which I could reel off, but people could see reference of them if they look up the blueprint. So it was an attempt, Steve, to kind of tell the full digital story, if you like, rather than just a part of it. Because I say, we see this as a as a sort of complex ecosystem of things that you've got to get right if you want to be the UK's leading digital city region.
Mm-hmm. Let's sort of shift gears a little bit now, Andy, because I'm interested in taking you more into some of the personal skill sets, if you like, which, again, we talk about a lot in security. You know, democratic government is all about building consensus, isn't it? You know, particularly with people who occasionally hold opposing views or don't share your same view. As mayor, you're able to make some decisions independently. You've made that point. But others involve consultation and approval of other members of the Greater Manchester Combined Authority, for instance. And some of those decisions need unanimous support. Others just need majority. Now, our audience for this podcast is cybersecurity professionals, many of whom have to sell their ideas to the board, to people who perhaps don't fully understand some of the implications, and sometimes as well up a chain to this ESO. So consensus building has become a very much more important skill for them than perhaps it ever was. And now I'm guessing here that that is something that you've had to become quite adept at in your particular role and with your teams. So talk to us a little bit about that skill set. How do you do that? How do you go about building consensus?
So a few things to say on that. I think the first is you have to set the right ambition. So what is it that you're trying to achieve? And is it something that everybody can buy into, that's not a sort of slightly divisive thing or a niche thing, but is actually something that kind of everyone feel is something worth achieving? So setting an ambition that is right, not just for you, but for your organization, for the place where you live, you know, that setting of the right ambition that maximizes consensus, you know, as many people as possible will feel able to say, yeah, okay, I will want to sign up to that. And then once you've done that, involving as many people in the sort of the building of the actual detail and the delivery of achieving it, and showing that you're as prepared to sort of be flexible about how that's done as anybody. So to put that into a very tangible example, when I came into the role as mayor in 2017, we had a rough sleeping crisis in the city region.
Right.
And I said in my manifesto, I wanted to end rough sleeping. Now, that was a big statement at the time, because we were not in a position where we were succeeding at that time. The issue felt bigger than what the councils could deal with. They were saying they didn't have the money. And it felt, you know, a stretch, if you like, to say that. But I stuck out by saying it because, you know, you've got to give people something worth working towards, haven't you? You know, it's got to be a sort of a thing that is worth achieving. I was in Westminster politics a long time, as people may know, and I used to hear a phrase a lot down there, which went along the lines of under-promise and over-deliver. Now, maybe you hear that in corporate circles too. Mm-hmm. I personally don't believe in that, because who gets inspired by an under-promise? You know, who kind of has their head lifted by that? It's a kind of, it's a safety mechanism, isn't it? People trying to protect themselves before they've even done anything. They're trying to sort of sell it short so that they don't get caught out. So they've almost, in my view, that's almost failing before you've started, because you're not setting the right ambition. You're undergoing on the ambition so that you don't look daft. Whereas I think the best form of leadership is saying, no, this is actually what we need to do, even though it's challenging. But by being ambitious, you actually get more buy-in to what you are actually trying to achieve, because then more people will buy into it. I hope this is, you know, kind of landing with you, Steve, and the listeners, because it's a really important philosophy of mine. Maybe that not everyone buys into it, but I believe that's good leadership. You know, give people something that's worth achieving, and then give them the opportunity to build it with you. So I then created something called the Homelessness Action Network, which was all about a collaboration of organisations from the public, private, voluntary, faith sectors, big and small, and then let everybody kind of put their energy into this and their, you know, and that, I think, is basically how you build consensus and in the end build success. And I will come back to my point, you know, if you set a narrow ambition or a sort of a half ambition because you're worried about not getting there, you're not actually... You've got to take a risk. You've got to say, I'm doing this because I believe this is right for me, for us, for the place, for the work, for the organisation, and I'm going to stick my neck out, actually. And in doing that, others will stick their neck out with you. And that, very much is my philosophy. Some will say that it doesn't always work for me, and it won't actually, because you won't always, you know. And some will say now that we haven't fully ended rough sleeping, we kind of have, in that if anybody wants to come off the streets, you know, we've got somewhere where they can go every night. So I feel we've in spirit, we've done it. But I think we got there because so many more people were prepared to buy in, because they saw the fact that I was prepared to take a risk as well with my own reputation and my own sort of position.
I think there are some really strong messages in that, Andy, for people listening to this, particularly those CISOs who are being increasingly required to take a stand, to demonstrate, as you just said, leadership. So thanks for sharing that. Finally, you mentioned slightly earlier that the ISF is coming to Manchester. We're going to be in the city in middle of November for our annual Congress. We'll be bringing, obviously, our members from all around the world, from Australia right the way through to South America, all to Manchester. What advice do you have for our members, our attendees, to get the most from their time in Manchester?
Oh, goodness. We're really looking forward to welcoming you all to the city. You know, I can't tell you, I mean, the reason I really wanted to do this podcast in advance was to say that, so that you all know that you're very welcome. And as I was saying before, you know, do just take a moment just to sort of look at the history of the place that you're coming to, because there is something inspiring about a place that was saying Black Lives Matter 160 years ago, you know, that has led many of the industrial disruptions of the past, the first industrial revolution, but at the same time has always tried to marry that with social progress. And I think that approach, the Manchester way, is so necessary for the times that we're in now. We haven't just got to fix economic or industrial problems, we've got to fix social problems at the same time. And, you know, I think, you know, the way we've always tried to work here offers a sort of a way of thinking about it that might be helpful for these new times that we're in. So do take a moment to think about the history. You will walk out of the convention centre and you will see a statue of Emmeline Pankhurst, the suffragette who didn't just change women's lives in the UK, but did so around the world by the empowerment of women and the right to vote. Right outside the convention centre is a monument to Peterloo, where British citizens were gunned down by the British Army, actually, fighting for the right to vote. So, you know, these things are important because progress has been hard won in this city. And I do think, you know, people should know about it and do wander over to see the Lincoln statue and just read up on all of that. So be inspired by the history, because it is a place with incredible history. But before I sound too worthy, I think get ready to enjoy yourself is what I would also say, because, you know, we're famous for a bit of that. We used to be known as the home of 24-hour party people. And I've been saying to my residents recently, we're going to be working hard to get that crown back from 10 Downing Street, London, because they became party central in recent times. And, you know, we're not having that. You know, this is the place where people know how to party properly. And I think we do need to come together post-pandemic, don't we, and enjoy being together, enjoy being with people. You know, they say in Manchester that tables are for dancing on. So, you know, bear that in mind. And if you take the mayor's advice to heart and go and do a bit of that, you know, that's great. Our bars and restaurants will be pleased to see you. But if you want bailing out from a police cell from the mayor, then I'm not sure I can go that far. But do come to the place. Do absorb what it's about. It's a very people-oriented place. It's a very progress-oriented place. It's always ready to bring on the new. You know, it's an industrial disruptor. It's a social disruptor. It always has been. And that's why we're so proud to have you in our city. But come here and think great thoughts, and come here and plan to change the world, because that's what we're all about. And I suspect it's what a lot of you are about as well.
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to spending, I think I'm going to be in Manchester for a week in total. So I'm certainly looking forward to that. And I know that a number of our members, just based on the registrations we've had already, are also looking forward to it too. So it looks as if it's going to be a bit of a bumper Congress for us. So, Andy, thank you very much indeed for taking the time just to give us some insight.
You're welcome. It's going to be great, Steve. And, you know, we'll be on hand to support the event in any way that we can. So I want to say again, you know, you will be so welcome here. I obviously joke a little bit about our nightlife. There is a good nightlife We have some football teams you may have heard of. There's plenty of music. There's plenty of things to keep you interested while you're here. But I hope you could help us as well define what is a true digital city region in the 21st century, and, you know, leave us with some real ideas and pointers to the future. So, you know, we'll be looking forward to some of that. But it should be a great event, and let's all make sure we come together in Manchester and make the most of it.
Fantastic. Andy, thank you very much indeed for your time.
You're welcome, Steve.
We'll be back next week with a new episode just before we take a break for Congress in Manchester. In the meantime, as always, we ask that you take 10 seconds to pull up this podcast on whatever device you're listening and give us a 5-star rating. If you have a little more time, you can even write a quick review. That helps other listeners who might enjoy our content find us. And we also want to make sure to introduce you to the ISF Analyst Insight podcast, which goes in depth on the hottest topics in information security. In every episode, ISF analysts hand-select active security professionals from ISF member organizations to discuss how the implementation of ISF research is uniquely applied to their real-world context. We hope you'll listen, and of course, we'll put a link to that show in our show notes. If there's a topic or a question that you'd like us to cover in a future episode, let us know at securityforum.org, which is also where you can find our catalog of past video and podcast episodes, as well as ISF's research, practical tools, and guidance related to discussions like today's. The ISF podcast is produced by TalkBox and Tavia Gilbert, with music by Alexander Filipiak, senior producer Katie Flood, mix and master by Kayla Elrod. Thanks for listening.